This is the playroom. Every time I pass this door, my heart sinks. It's not a frightening room. It's just a children's playroom. My sister and brother live here. They've been living here for 50 years. There they are, playing on the floor. Playing with dolls and toy soldiers. They're frightened of me. Look at them shrink into the corner of the room.
The Columbia Workshop, radio's foremost laboratory of new writing and production techniques, presents The Playroom, a modern allegory written by Howard Rodman and produced and directed by John Dietz.
Do you think he's gone?
He'll come back. He always does. Why does he come here? Why doesn't he leave us alone?
Oh, don't cry, Elsa. I'll protect you from him. We'll put chairs in front of the door so he can't come in.
He'll break the chairs.
And I'll put my soldiers at the door. They'll kill him with the cannon. Blow him to bits. He's gone. We can play again.
The music stopped. He broke the music box.
No, he didn't. It just wound down. Here. You see?
It's beautiful music, Paul. Beautiful.
I like it. Let's play war. It's my turn to kill your soldiers. Look.
Oh.
I did it. I killed them. I killed them all. Oh, there's one left. Oh, I did it. The game's over. I won the war.
You always win the war, Paul.
I know. What are we going to do now?
I don't know.
Let's have another war.
I don't want to play war again. I'm tired.
All right. I'll look out the window.
I'm putting my doll to sleep. Sleep, my little baby. Sleep. Sleep.
Why are all your dolls girl dolls?
So they won't have to be soldiers and get broken.
Oh, I didn't mean to break them, Elsa.
I know. But when we play war, you always knock their heads off and break their arms.
You can't war any other way.
What do you see out the window, Paul? Don't you ever want to go outside to see?
No. Everything's so different out there. It's frightening. There's no place to hide. All the colors are gray, Elsa. And things go up higher and higher. Buzzing things fly across the sky.
Like butterflies?
Butterflies are pretty and they fly quietly. These are monsters. And the sun strikes them and they flash. Even the sunlight is harsh, Elsa.
Is there anything new outside, Paul?
There are always new things and everything changes. Elsa, I think we've changed a little.
How, Paul?
Your face is wrinkled, like the apple we kept on the windowsill.
Oh, and your hair is gray, too.
Wasn't it always gray, Elsa?
Once it was black, I think. A long time ago. Black, like the inside of a closet.
The room was bigger once, I think.
Was it? Oh, I can't remember anymore. Don't talk anymore, Paul. It's sad. It's sad.
Oh, don't cry, Elsa. Please, don't cry.
Their life goes on like that. Days and years have the same significance for my brother and my sister. Dolls and toy soldiers. Fairy tale books, and their hair grows gray and their limbs wither. Their faces wrinkle like the apple on the windowsill. My mother did this to them, my beautiful mother, kind, gentle, and shy. My mother used to cry out,
"The world is too sharp. There's no softness and no poetry."
And when my father died, and the real business of the world pressed in on her,
"And the world is too full of mortgages and taxes. I can't go on thinking in terms like these. I want poetry."
The bell rang, and Mother cried out,
"Go away. Go away. Go away. The whole world is at my door ringing my doorbell. I won't have it. I won't have them harassing me, besieging me. Let the world stay outside."
Mother had the doorbell removed, but the world was still outside. The world kept knocking at our door, a huge, slow, muffled knocking. The world kept knocking at our door, a huge, slow, muffled knocking. Ponderous. Inexorable.
"They won't go away! Don't they all go away!"
Once I said to my mother,
"Open the door, Mother. See who it is, Mother. Please, Mother, please."
I go. Yes?
"Missus, I hate to bother you, but across the street the children have no clothes to wear, no food to eat."
"Well?"
"Across the street, missus. No further off than that. No food and no clothes. Soon disease..."
"I'm not interested in what goes on across the street."
"Please."
"I'm not interested."
"But this could cross the street, missus."
We had closed the door, and we closed the windows. The stench of the poverty across the street never assailed our well-bred nostrils. There was poetry. Poetry in the charming pictures which clung to our polished walls. Poetry in the grace of my mother gliding along our polished floors. Poetry in the evenings, reading of the fairy tale to Elsa and Paul and me. I was Jamie then.
And the charming prince bent over the sleeping princess and thought how beautiful she was. And then, with pity in his heart, he kissed her full upon the lips.
"Can't you read something different, Mother? Something about real girls and boys and real soldiers and policemen. I'm tired of always fairy tales."
"Then you may leave the room, Jamie. We don't want you here if you don't like our beautiful stories. Do we, Elsa? Do we, Paul? You don't belong with us if you're tired of fairy tales."
I didn't leave the room, and I never asked for real stories again. But from that day, my mother changed towards me. It was as though I ceased to be her child. We continued to listen to fairy tales, the doors and windows barred. And all the while, disease was crossing the street. Slyly, a spurt, and then rest a while. Furtively, hidden in the slime we could not see through our heavily curtained windows. Could not smell above the sweet, pervasive odor of lavender. And then... I caught it. My mother was outraged.
"I won't have it. I've protected you in every way. You'll give it to Paul and Elsa. I won't stand for it."
Mother wouldn't stand for it. It had to go. I was contaminated. I had brought it into the house. It would have to go. I went with it. Mother bundled me off to the hospital. I remember the finality of the slamming door behind me. She never came to see me while I was in the hospital, not once. Not once did she give a single sign to show she knew of my existence. On the morning I left the hospital, our family lawyer called for me.
"Hello, Mr. Adams. Where's Mother?"
"She wouldn't come, Jamie."
"Oh, well, I'm going home. I'll see you there."
"I'm afraid not. I have a letter from your mother, Jamie. I'm to make all arrangements to put you in boarding school."
"I won't go."
"Oh, that's not up to me."
"I won't go to boarding school. I'm going home. I'm going home."
"Wait. Jamie, wait. Your mother doesn't want to see you."
"Mother! Mother, let me in! Mother! Mother! Please!"
And the charming prince bent over the sleeping princess and thought how beautiful she was. And then, with pity in his heart, he kissed her full upon the lips. How beautiful, Mother. How very beautiful. The knocking, Mother. The knocking frightens me.
Nothing to be afraid of. It's outside. It will always stay outside.
Yes, outside. I never saw or heard from my mother again. It was 30 years before I saw my brother and sister. Mother clung to life with grim tenacity. She herself had as little to do with the world as possible. Her lawyer heard from her once a year or once in 2 years. He never saw her, neither did anyone else. But if Mother had little to do with the world, Paul and Elsa were completely isolated in their playroom. Mother hated the idea that they would grow up. Each year, she would make clothes for them. Children's clothes in slightly larger size. Seems strange to me that my mother, a frail, graceful woman as I remember her, could have cast so great a shadow as to obscure all the world from Paul and Elsa. But for 30 years, she was the world to them. Finally, of course, my mother died. Elsa?
Paul, where's Mother?
Mother? I don't know.
Did she go away?
I don't know. Let's play war, Elsa.
I don't want to play war. Will you read me the story, Paul?
About the prince and the beautiful princess?
Yes.
Where's the book?
Here it is.
And the charming prince bent over the sleeping princess and thought how beautiful she was. And then, with pity in his heart, he kissed her full upon the lips.
How beautiful. How very beautiful. Paul.
What, Elsa?
Where is Mother?
I don't know.
How sad. How very sad.
What's sad, Elsa?
I don't know. Why were you pounding on the door? You frightened the children.
Children? There are no children here that I know of.
Who are you?
My mother left this house to me. That is, she left it in my care. Who are you?
I am the children's nurse.
What children?
Your brother and your sister.
How long have you been here?
I don't know. Your mother stopped the clock.
I went inside. The nurse closed the door behind me. And in the twilight of the heavily shaded windows, in the heavy, dead quiet of the dead rooms with their shrouded furniture, not a clock ticked. I snapped the window shade up. A single, solid bar of light leaped across the room. The nurse started. I went upstairs. The nurse stayed behind, watching me as I climbed the steps.
What is it?
I knew that Paul and Elsa were on the other side of that playroom door. I could hear them whispering excitedly. Behind me, the nurse began to whimper.
You frightened the children. You frightened the children. The children.
I flung the door open. I didn't laugh at Paul with a full black beard threaded with gray, a toy pistol in his hand, short trousers, knee-high socks, a child's shirt. Paul threatening me with a toy pistol. My brother Paul would have been a brave man. I didn't laugh. I didn't laugh at Elsa peering timidly from behind Paul. Short skirts for Elsa, and her knobby knees hurt me when I looked at them. I didn't laugh. dolls strewn everywhere, toy soldiers, a fairy tale book open on the floor. I looked at them and searched into their eyes for a sign of understanding or of recognition. There was none.
Go away.
What does one say to children? I won't hurt you.
Go away. You frighten my sister.
I won't hurt you.
Go away. I'll kill you.
I won't hurt you. I stayed very quietly in the room, afraid to move for fear they would run trembling into a corner of the room and try to hide there. Tears came to my eyes.
Why are you crying? Are you sad?
Yes, I am sad.
I'm sad sometimes. I cry. Paul doesn't like me to.
Of course not.
Who are you?
I? Why, I've come to live here and take care of you.
Nurse takes care of us.
I searched desperately around the room for some object with which I might establish a bridge between us. I saw a plant standing by the window. I went to it.
Stop! You'll kill it!
I was unnerved. The shriek had startled me. I dropped the plant. I'm sorry. I'm very sorry.
He killed it. He killed my flower. I knew he would.
Go away. Oh. Go away.
I went. I didn't even close the door. I left Elsa kneeling, huddling the plant close to her body. She was crying, and Paul was trying to comfort her.
There, don't cry, Elsa. Don't cry. Look, I'm starting the music again.
I told the nurse to get a new pot for the plant, and then I forgot about it. I set to work, opening windows, letting in air, pulling down draperies, letting in light. I started the clocks again. I had the doorbell put back.
Where do you want me to put this here telephone, sir?
In my back. It is bothering me, sir.
I kept myself as busy as I could. I never went upstairs to see Paul and Elsa during those days. I left them completely to their nurse. She gave me a weekly report.
They don't like your being here in the house.
Don't they?
It disturbs them. These changes frighten them.
Then see to it that they stay in their room and keep the door closed. I don't want to see them. They stayed in their room. I stayed downstairs. Downstairs, the world was real. And upstairs, in the playroom...
Paul?
Yes, Elsa?
Where can I hide my flower?
Oh, I don't know. Why do you want to hide it?
Because he'll come back and kill it. Where can I hide my flower, Paul?
Oh, behind the toy box?
He'll see it there.
Oh, I don't know, Elsa. Do you want to play war?
I have to hide my flower.
Oh, after you hide your flower.
After? All right.
Hide it in the closet.
Oh, yes, Paul. That's a good hiding place.
All right. Let's play war.
Once I went quietly to their room while they were sleeping. They slept as quietly and as innocently as children, holding hands across the space between their beds. Paul's eyes opened a tiny bit. I knew he was awake because he gripped Elsa's hand a little more tightly. But he closed his eyes again almost instantly and pretended, like any child, that he was asleep. What does one do with children? Tuck them in and kiss them goodnight? I bent over Paul's bed to tuck his blankets in a little more firmly. He shrank away from me. I felt his muscles tense. I left. The following afternoon, I tried again. I brought presents with me. I knocked on the playroom door. No answer. I knocked again, louder. I lost my patience and flung the door open. I felt like a fool. They were standing far back against the wall. Elsa clinging to Paul's hand. Those blank children's eyes staring in terror. Why are you afraid of me? What have I done to you?
Please go away.
Don't be afraid, Elsa. Don't be afraid.
I didn't mean to frighten you. Why didn't you answer the door when I knocked?
Go away.
I brought some things for you. A doll for you, Elsa. Here, take it. She didn't move. She didn't stretch a little finger toward that doll. I laid it on the table. Paul, I brought something for you, too. A cannon. It's exactly like a real cannon, the kind real soldiers use. Paul was implacable. He stood like marble against the wall and glared at me.
Go away!
You kill things. You killed my flower.
I'm very sorry. Didn't Nurse bring you a new pot for it?
It died.
It shouldn't have died. And then, suddenly, Elsa ran to the closet door and planted herself in front of it.
You can't have it! You can't have it!
You haven't put your flower in the closet, have you?
I won't let you take it.
Elsa, please. You ought not to keep a plant in a closet. It will die without sunlight.
I won't let you have it. I won't.
I pushed Elsa gently aside and opened the closet door. The plant was standing on the floor just inside. It had grown yellow and withered. I brought it into the room and placed it on the windowsill.
You killed it. You made me put it in the closet.
I didn't know what to do. The plant revolted me. That sickly, pale, obscene, sun-starved, closet-stifled growth, so much like my brother and sister, barred from reality. I picked it up and hurled it to the floor. Paul jumped on me. He pounded me furiously with his gnarled fist. The little child in a temper tantrum. I pushed him off and he jumped back at me. I grabbed his throat. I let him go. He slumped to the floor. All the strength gone out of him. I looked at him, at Elsa hovering over him, frightened almost to death.
Go away. You hurt my brother. Oh, go away.
I fled. I didn't hear anything.
Oh, didn't you hear that?
I thought I heard something.
What?
Oh, I don't know.
Paul!
Oh, it's only a noise. It'll go away. Elsa, dear, hold the music box to your ear. It will make the noise go away.
Children are disturbed by the noise.
So am I.
The children are being threatened.
So am I.
Let me close the windows. Let me put the draperies back up to shut it out.
You can't shut the world outside. It comes knocking at your door. The disease comes crossing the street.
You have to do something for the children.
What? What can I do for them now?
Take them to a shelter.
They've lived in a shelter all their lives. Do you still think barred doors can keep the world out? Do you think closed windows can help? What do you think I can do now?
Take them away. Take them away, please.
We went to a shelter. We fled in the middle of the night, down to a shelter. I hated the sound of the word. How long would it take for the bombs to make the shelter a crypt? How long would the concrete remain stronger than the bursting force of bombs? How long? We sat on the concrete benches built along the concrete walls. The pressure of our depth pounded our eardrums. Paul and Elsa were silent, gray as the walls. Shelter. Security. The security of rats and the cold, sweated walls. Paul sat quietly clutching a toy soldier, clutching it more and more tightly as he became more and more afraid. Elsa had her fairy tale book. In their fear of the bombs and the place, they'd forgotten to be afraid of me.
Would you read to me, please?
Of course. What would you like me to read?
Read the one about beautiful princess who falls asleep.
Oh, yes. I like that one. It's so beautiful.
And the charming prince bent over the sleeping princess and thought how beautiful she was. And then, with pity in his heart, he kissed her full upon the lips.
How beautiful. How very beautiful.
The planes went away. The guns stopped firing. We crept out of our holes. With Paul holding one of my hands and Elsa the other, we went back to the house.
Oh, look at our house.
The house had been hit, burned, was ruined, but it clung to existence. On the second floor, by a bombing miracle, the playroom was all but untouched. I walked through the downstairs making plans for rebuilding. The world always rebuilds. I forgot about Elsa and Paul for a moment, and in that moment they slipped away from me and back upstairs into the playroom.
Nothing has changed, Paul.
Your hair is growing gray, Elsa.
Hasn't it always been that way?
I don't remember anymore.
A doll got broken, Paul.
Did it? Oh, one of my soldiers is broken, too.
The noise did it, Paul.
Was there really a noise?
I think so. I don't remember.
I don't know. I don't remember. Of course, I shall rebuild the house. I shall make it strong again. But the playroom will remain as it always has been. And every time I pass the door, my heart will sink. It will not be a frightening room. It will be just a children's playroom.
Maybe we dreamed it, Paul.
Maybe we did. Let's play war.
But, Paul, we've just been playing war.
You have just heard the Columbia Workshop production of The Playroom, a modern allegory written by Howard Rodman and directed by John Dietz. Horace Braham appeared as narrator. Others in the cast included Alistair Kyle, Ara Gerald, Bert Tanswell, Ila Benson, Enid Markey, and Colin Keith Johnson. The musical score was specially written by Norman Lockwood and conducted by Frederick Steiner. Next week, part of the country goes on daylight saving time. If your area remains on standard time, tune in the Columbia Workshop 1 hour earlier. This will be an experimental novelty entitled A Study in Bells by Bogart Carlaw and Howard Connell, directed by Albert Ward. Your announcer is Sandy Becker for CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.